Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. No, we are not video streaming tonight for a number of reasons, not the least of which is I have a headache, darling. I'm sorry. Oh, well, we have more information on war funding and votes in Congress about paying for these two wars, these two terrible wars. And something caught my eye today from the BBC, and that is the United States fails to account for Iraq reconstruction billions. Now, we've talked about this before, and other media outlets have talked about it before also. But here it is again. We, in the first place, we know from reports years ago, remember Americans have a retention span of about, 22 minutes. Ancient history is what happened last year. So this has been brought up in the past, for sure. But it's worth repeating, especially when it's broadcast by the BBC. A U.S. federal watchdog has criticized the U.S. military for failing to account properly for billions of dollars it received to help rebuild Iraq. The Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction says the U.S. Department of Defense is unable to account properly for 96% of the money. Do you understand that? Billions have gone to Iraq to rebuild that country while our country is sinking. And you know this is nothing new. But the money is impossible to trace, according to a U.S. audit. Out of reach, or out of just over $9 billion. $8.7 billion is unaccounted for, according to this this report. The U.S. military said the funds were not necessarily missing, but that spending records might have been archived. In a response attached to the report, it said attempts to account, or in attempting to account for the money, it might require, quote, significant archival retrieval efforts, end quote. Now, much of the money came from the sale of Iraqi oil and gas. Some frozen Saddam Hussein-era assets were also sold off. The funds in question were administered by the U.S. Department of Defense between 2004 and 2007 and were earmarked for reconstruction projects. Who is the main reconstruction contractor in Iraq? 3, 2, 1. That's right, Halliburton. The report says the lack of proper accounting makes it impossible to say exactly what happened to most of the money. Now, of course, this is not the first time that allegations of missing billions have surfaced in relation to our invasion of Iraq. No one from the Iraqi government was immediately available for comment to the BBC. Well, I think I know where the money went. I think Dick Cheney and his crew of robbers, his wrecking crew, stole it. I mean, come on, Halliburton, the primary contractor in Iraq, 96% of money that was to be spent on Iraq reconstruction is unaccounted for. Nobody knows where it's at. Nobody knows what happened to it. Nobody knows if anything was built. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And you wonder if Dick Cheney is going to get a heart transplant. That bastard will be able to buy 20 hearts, 100 hearts if he wants them. Email from Rose in Northern California. She writes about House Consent Resolution 301. Here's what it is. Directing the president, pursuant to Section 5C of the War Powers Resolution, to remove the United States Armed Forces from Pakistan, failed. From Pakistan, failed with only 38 yeses. This was the Kucinich resolution. A resolution is the first step in the legislative process. Introduced bills and resolutions first go to committee, then deliberate, investigate, and revise them before they go to general debate. Our Congress doesn't even want to discuss the legality of these wars. I'm sorry, I said Pakistan. I mean Afghanistan. My bad. We have forces, of course, in Pakistan, too. Now, H.R. 4899 was passed with 148 Democrats and 160 Republicans voting yes. The majority of Democratic representatives have voted to use our tax money for more war, more death and destruction, more money to be stolen by corrupt private contractors, warlords, make more payoffs to anybody with their hands out, whether they're Americans or, in this case, Afghans. The $59 billion measure to fund Obama's additional 30,000 troops in Afghanistan, that was passed. And the war will not end, and you know it as well as I, with the next war. Pakistan, China, North Korea, Iran, on and on and on. War with these countries almost certainly will be waged on some level. Hope that it's not North Korea or China. And Rose says, the death march for war without end never stopped. We thought we stalled it during the 70s. We didn't. It only paused. Evil wins because money and power are drugs. Drugs that are injected into the blood through fake patriotism and bumper sticker slogans of bringing freedom to all. The drug kills. The drug kills. Rose from Northern California. Now, earlier today, the House approved and sent to Obama a measure that was overdue to pay for combat operations in both Afghanistan and Iraq. However, Democrats are starting to say, and Democrats in the House are starting to refuse to support this. The Republicans, of course, still support, Republicans support anything that has to do with corporate America, war, death, or destruction, because the Republican Party is corrupt and insane. But the $59 billion measure passed by a vote of 308 to 114. This in spite of the fact that the majority of Americans want us out of Afghanistan. 75% of the House, nearly, 75% said to hell with the American public and voted in favor of more war. Remember when the Congress was put together, the idea was that the will of the people would translate through our representatives in the House and through our representatives, not at the beginning, not through the Senate. That was a whole different ballgame. But the will of the people would translate into policy through the United States House of Representatives. 75% of Americans say no war. Or, I'm sorry, 65%. 75% of Congress says more war. So 148 Democrats and 160 Republicans backed this bill to spend another $60 billion for death and destruction. However, 102 Democrats and 12 Republicans voted no. Now, all that means is the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party is about to fall apart. And I think it should. I think it should fracture and splinter into a million pieces. And if there's any justice, then the Democratic Party will reconstitute itself as the party of the people, which it used to be. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Evident, yeah. In the American, you will lie with the whole
So the House passed by a very wide margin, 308 to 114. The $59 billion spending bill to continue to funnel money into Afghanistan and Iraq, and nobody knows where it goes. Well, I should rephrase that. We the people don't know where it goes. It's incredible. An earlier decision by the Senate to reject an extra $22 billion that was tacked onto it in domestic spending is pretty typical for the Democrats. The Democrats put that in, and then the Republicans looked at the Democrats and put the evil eye on them, and the Democrats immediately had to go to the cloakroom and pee their pants. And when they came back, they took the $22 billion out. It's incredible. Last year, 32 Democrats opposed a similar mid-year war spending bill offered during the president's first term. This year, instead of 32 saying no, it was 102 said no. Well, at this rate, how long is it going to take before the Democrats, well, we have another year or two before the Democrats finally get to the point where they say no to continue this? The Democrats, you see, though, are not going to vote no for war funding for a very simple reason. When it's time for the reelection, which is this November, the entire House is up, their opponents, their Republican opponents, will start shrieking, "They abandon our troops!" You know how that goes. So the Democrats, since they have no answer to that, except to say, no, I didn't. I haven't abandoned the troops at all. I just want this to end. I want to bring the troops home. The Democrats don't do that. The Democrats, in order to forestall that kind of an attack by the Republicans, just continue to go along with the funding. Nobody knows where the money goes. How many stories did you hear during the Iraq War, until we withdrew from the cities? How many times did you hear the stories about the soldiers that didn't have equipment? They didn't have the right kind of weapons to commit murder. They didn't have the bombs necessary to blow people to pieces. They didn't have the right kind of vehicles to make sure they didn't get blown to pieces. They didn't have water that they could drink. They didn't have food that they could eat. They didn't have flak jackets that worked. How many times? Oh, you've forgotten already? Well, I would say maybe 50 on my program. I don't know about the other programs. It was a constant story. But we've got to have our dirty, filthy little wars, don't we, huh? Corporate America has to have them. So the pigs in Congress, the Democrats and the Republicans, continue to provide corporate America and the private contractors and the insane people who are running the wars and the weapons industry all the money they want. Meanwhile, back home, who's building bridges here? Who's building schools here? All this talk about, well, the little Afghan girls should be able to go to school. Well, so should the little American girls, don't you think? Well, the little Afghan boys should be able to study something other than religious fundamentalism. Well, so should the little American boys, don't you think? Well, the Afghans need a strong infrastructure. We've got to win the hearts and minds. Well, don't the Americans deserve the same thing? But you see, nobody gets rich here. The weapons industry, the private contractors, the war makers, these goddamn generals that just make my turn my stomach. They don't care. You know, the generals and the lieutenant colonels and the majors and the rest of these people like to strut around in their uniforms with their chest full of whatever the hell that is on their chest. Hey, yeah, we're going to go over there and make war. Now you have this Marine dude, General Mattis, who media have already identified as a hard-ass warrior. Boy, he's no nonsense. He's a tough talker to take Petraeus' job. Meanwhile, back here in the non-war-making front, we have schools closing. We have hospitals that can no longer afford to stay open. We have teachers being fired. We have sanitation workers that can no longer be paid. We have bridges falling down, roads that are rotting away, railroads that don't exist. But the generals, you see, and the colonels and the lieutenant colonels and all these fancy-ass boys in the Pentagon. They've got to strut their stuff. Yeah, we're out here defending America. What do you think we're doing, huh? War is a racket, boys. It always has been. It always will be. It is today. Billions and billions, 96% of the construction money sent, gone, unaccounted for in Iraq. And you know what? In Afghanistan, same story. Creeps.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
The hour? Back to the House approving the measure to pay for combat operations. I mean, this just, I don't know, it puts me out there where I don't need to be. The vote, 308 to 114, with 102 Democrats and 12 Republicans opposing the spending. You'd think that would get somebody's attention. If we still had representative government, it would. If we were still living in a system where the people notify their representatives about what the people want, and the representatives respond, and the president, seeking advice and consent from the representatives, goes ahead and does what the people wants with the right kind of caveats in place to protect the minorities and so on and so forth, minority opinions. But Obama administration officials said the outcome of this vote showed that that classified leak with the 92,000 documents dumped into the internet, that that leak had not jeopardized congressional support for the war. And Obama administration officials also noted that the Senate had passed the money with no objection. So, not only is this administration as warmongering as the one before it, and as warmongering as the one before that, and as warmongering as the one before that, and just keep going back. Not only is this administration a warmongering administration, but the representatives of the people don't care what kind of documents are dumped out there for people to look at. This is what we talked about last night. Somebody sent me an email. Well, what do you think is going to happen? I said, nothing. Nothing will happen. For a very simple reason. Members of Congress do not respond to the will of the people. Hello? I don't care what party they're in. I'm not talking about the teabaggers and the psychopaths who listen to the sick bastard Glenn Beck. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the vast majority of people in this country who do not want war, especially not these two. But the members of Congress, of the House and the Senate, couldn't care less because you and I did not put them in office. Who did? Corporate America. What does corporate America want? War. Constant war. Unending war. It's very profitable. It's easy to steal and commit fraud during times of war. It's easy to lie and cheat. It's easy to get away with anything. And God forbid that somebody should question what's going on at the war, what's going on in the funding of the war, what's going on with all the appropriations for the war, because if you question, you're abandoning the troops. You're a dirty, rotten traitor. You're a commie. You're a Kenyan. You're a liberal. Steny Hoyer, the Maryland Democrat and House Majority Leader, said, quote, "The president is taking a wise and balanced approach in Afghanistan, and it deserves our support," end quote. That is the House Majority Leader, a Democrat. "The president is taking a wise and balanced approach in Afghanistan, and that approach deserves our support." Now, the vote came just a few hours after Obama, in his first public statement on the leaked documents, after Obama sought to blunt any suggestion that the documents could force a rethinking of the nation's commitment to the war effort. Oh, no! Rethink? Jesus God! George Bush didn't rethink things. Dick Cheney didn't rethink things. And by God, I'm not going to either, so saith Mr. Obama. And why should he? Barack Obama is so removed from the people who put him in office, he might as well be on Mars, or maybe we should. This president is not going to respond to the people. This Congress is not going to respond to the people. They're going to respond to corporate America, because corporate America now owns the government of the United States. You disagree? Okay. Obama said he reiterated, as his advisors have previously, that the problems in Afghanistan reflected by the documents have long been known. Oh, we know about that. And they're being addressed by the policy changes he's put in place. Oh, we know all about that. We know that we're having our asses handed to us. We know that Americans are dying now in ever-increasing numbers. We know that Pakistan ISS intelligence service is providing intelligence so that our people will be killed. We know that. We know the Taliban is resurgent. We know that Hamid Karzai is a liar, a sneak, and a cheat, not to mention a coward, a little dictator. We know that. We know his brother is the go-to guy where it concerns the opium trade in Afghanistan. We know that. Oh, my God. We know that our soldiers are killed over there because of intelligence provided by our ostensible allies in the area. We know all that. There's nothing new. Jesus, God, move on. What's everybody standing around about? Let's go. We got a war to fight. I know all about this. My advisors have already addressed this. We know about it. We all know about it. What the hell's wrong with you people? You think this WikiLeaks piece of trash means anything? Come on, get real. Get real. He said, "Well, I'm concerned about the disclosure of sensitive information from the battlefield that could potentially jeopardize individuals or operations." What? Sensitive information? This is not sensitive information. This has nothing to do with troop movements. This has nothing to do with strategic plans. This has nothing to do with weapons and tactics. This has nothing to do with combat operations. This has to do with the lies and deceit and the not just of our leaders, but everybody in the region. And meanwhile, American soldiers continue to die, continue to have their arms and legs blown off, continue to be blinded, continue to have half their brains blown away, while the armchair warriors, the Republicans, sit back here and say, "Yeah, you boys, go ahead. We're fighting for freedom. Freedom ain't free, you know. God damn, I hope you don't eat them French fries anymore. Them are freedom fries now, boys." And the Democrats? The Democrats have to run to the cloakroom about every 15 minutes and wet themselves, because every time they think they get 10 or 20 Democrats together, they say, "Look, maybe we ought to stop this." Oh, no. Oh, no, we can't do that. Oh, my God. Who among us is thinking? Who among us is taking that position? Oh, my God, get them out of the party. What are you, a liberal? Get out of here. Ooh, quick, hide him. I'm up for re-election. Jesus, I don't want this kind of discussion. While I'm concerned about the disclosure of sensitive information from the battlefield that could potentially jeopardize individuals or operations, Mr. Obama said, the fact is these documents don't reveal any issues that haven't already informed our public debate on Afghanistan. End quote. Well, then, why are you getting your bloomers in a wad, President Bohica? If there's nothing in there, well, then why is everybody running around with their hair on fire? Oh, 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 get Mr. Assange. Look what he's done. Oh, my God. But of course, there's nothing in there, but get him, get him. Why? Obama also said to reporters in the Rose Garden, quote, indeed, indeed, the documents point to the same challenges that led me to conduct an extensive review of our policy last fall, end quote. Oh, well, okay then. Well, then let's all relax. Sit down. What the hell's all the screaming about? Okay, all right. The same challenges that led you to conduct an extensive review of your policy last fall. Okay, okay. Well, then everything's all right, right? Okay. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Obama went on to say, quote, for 7 years, we failed to implement a strategy adequate to the challenges in this region, the region from which the 9/11 attacks were waged and other attacks against the United States and our friends and allies have been planned. What? That's why, he went on, we've substantially increased our commitment there, insisted upon greater accountability from our partners in Afghanistan and Pakistan, developed a new strategy that can work, and put in place a team, including one of our finest generals, to execute the plan. Amen, end quote. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless everything. I swear to God. Ah! Now, he added, we have to see that strategy through. End quote. Says that the secret documents released Sunday by WikiLeaks provide 92,000 additional reasons why Congress should stop the U.S. war in Afghanistan. It will take 146 votes on the floor of the House to do so. He goes on to say it was July 1st when 162 members of the House voted for Congressman Jim McGovern's amendment requiring an exit strategy with a time certain for U.S. combat troops to be withdrawn. The leaked documents underscore why the open-ended military commitment to the second most corrupt government on earth, the Karzai government, makes no sense. Under the rules of the House, if these 162 House members, whoever they are, hold their ground and vote against sending an additional billions for this endless war, the motion to pass the appropriation will be defeated. As the New York Times editorial page says this morning about the leaks, the WikiLeaks documents, quote, but the most alarming of the reports were the ones that described the cynical collusion between Pakistan's military intelligence service and the Taliban. Despite the billions of dollars the United States has sent in aid to Pakistan since September 11, 2001, they offer powerful new evidence, the report, the documents do, that crucial elements of Islamabad's power structure have been actively helping to direct and support the forces attacking the American-led military coalition, end quote. And why shouldn't they? I mean, the Pakistanis, the Afghans, the Iraqis, they don't want, what the hell do they want us around for? We are the invader. We are there for spurious, questionable reasons. We're not there so that all the children can wear white after, before Labor Day, excuse me. Don't want to commit a fashion faux pas here. We are not there so the little boys and little girls can get secular educations. That's not why we're there. If we were there for that reason, let's start someplace else. I'll tell you, let's go to some of the African countries where men are being butchered daily because they're witches. We're not there for freedom, justice, apple pie and mom, or whatever the hell they eat in Afghanistan. That's not why we're there. We're there for corporate America because war is very profitable. War is a racket. When there is war going on, lying, cheating, stealing. Now, you got to ask yourself, or I have to ask myself, I don't know about you, but I ask myself when I read this stuff, I think to myself, okay, why is this not the number one story on every newscast until somebody in the Obama administration or the Bush administration before that or the Clinton administration before that or the Bush administration before that or the Reagan administration? You know, just go back as far as you want. But why doesn't our crack newscasters and our excellent First Amendment protected news media, why don't they ask the question over and over again, where's the money? How could 96% of the money sent to Iraq for reconstruction projects be gone? Where is it? Who took it? Who's watching the store? Why are we fighting a war we cannot win? Where's the money? Where's the money? But, no. Our newscast will have stories about the wonderful people, and they are wonderful. Don't send me an email and say, well, you heartless bastard. The wonderful people down in the Gulf who are cleaning the turtle babies. The wonderful people down in the Gulf who are taking care of the, I don't know, pick something quick. The pelicans, there you go. They're wonderful people. God bless them. But doesn't that belong on the Animal Planet channel? Or Discovery or Oprah? The evening news is 22 minutes. Lindsay Lohan went to jail. So why do you suppose our First Amendment protected news media in this country, our press, to use a generic term, doesn't demand answers? Because they don't care either. I mean, they do care, but they come down on the side. I don't care what they say on their editorial pages or what they say in their television editorials or what these clownish anchor people say on cable and on over-the-air broadcast. They love war! Are you kidding me? Especially television. Woohoo! Let's go, boys! Show us the bombs and the explosions. We love it. We'll keep our cameras trained on that for 47 minutes without let up. Show us the unmarked graves with thousands of bodies. Come on, boys, war! So if you are Republican, which means you are a war lover, 98% of you, You're getting exactly what you want from Barack Obama. What are you bitching about? What are you Republicans complaining about? This guy, Obama, it would be impossible for him to give you anything more of what you demand. Why aren't you supporting him? And why isn't every Democrat in America turning his or her back on this administration and say, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, won't get fooled again.
Attention.
January 29th, 2002, from CBSNews.com. On September 10th, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld declared war, not on foreign terrorists. He said, quote, the adversary is closer to home. It's the Pentagon bureaucracy, end quote. He said, money wasted by the military poses a serious threat. Rumsfeld promised change, but the next day, September 11th, the world changed. And in the rush to fund a war on terrorism, the war on waste seems to have been forgotten. CBS News correspondent Vince Gonzalez reports, while its own auditors admit the military cannot account for 25% of what it spends, Rumsfeld admitted, quote, according to some estimates, we cannot track $2.3 trillion. That's $2,300 billion in transactions. That's $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. To understand how the Pentagon can lose track of trillions, consider the case of one military accountant who tried to find out what happened to a mere $300 million. The accountant said, quote, we know it's gone, but we don't know what they spent it on, end quote. That was from Jim Minery, Defense Finance and Accounting Service. Minery, a former Marine turned whistleblower, is risking his job, of course, by speaking out for the first time about the millions he noticed were missing. And truth seekers, this is before Bush and Cheney invaded Iraq. Trillions. Oh, well. And then there's the previously hidden report by the U.S. Civil Affairs Office, according to Tom Andrews, writing at commondreams.org today, detailing why the insurgency strategy is doomed to fail. That's our current policy in Afghanistan. Quote, The people of Afghanistan keep losing their trust in the government because of the high amount of corrupted government officials. The general view of the Afghans is that the current government, Hamid Karzai, is worse than the Taliban, end quote. So that would make any counterinsurgency strategy mission impossible. Impossible, regardless of the number of soldiers who sent American soldiers sent there. Didn't anybody, any of these metal encrusted, creaking, murderous bastards in the Pentagon, didn't any of them learn anything from our experience in Vietnam? Well, of course they did. What they learned is keep your head down, keep screwing the American public, take the money, hope for another bar or another star or another command. You know, get over there in the combat zone so you get your ribbons. Just make sure that you don't get your ass in the line of fire. Hey, General? Hey, Colonel? Hey, Major? Huh? Boy, you're not talking about General Mattis. Marine Corps Commandant, you're not talking about General Stanley McChrystal, United States Army Special Forces. You're not talking about them, are you, boy? Any counterinsurgency strategy in Afghanistan is impossible to achieve, regardless of the number of soldiers who are sent into harm's way. Which leads to the next sentence. It is therefore unconscionable to send American men and women to Afghanistan to risk their lives for a strategy that is built on quicksand. All that was required today was 146 members of Congress to say no. And it didn't happen. Aren't you, come on, Truth Seeker, aren't you sick of this? I mean, billions and billions of dollars, where is this money coming from? In this country, we have this stinking, stupid, what does Obama call it? Race to the top for education. Race to the top? Oh, I see. It's a contest among all the states. And whoever passes the most exams and does the best on the test, why, by golly gee, they win a prize. They win money. The rest of the states can go screw themselves. But the top state or states, oh yes, race to the top. It's almost as stupid and counter education as No Child Left Behind. But there's plenty of money for war. Billions. Trillions. This is madness. You know it's madness. I don't care how right-wing you are. I don't care how democratic, big D, you consider yourself. This is crazy. So why are we doing it? Why do we keep doing this? Why does our media not tell us, hey, wait a minute, trillions are being stolen? Every time the media tries, why, back in 2002, CBS tried. I just shared it with you. I just read what the CBS dude said. Bidia, 2.9, 2.1, 2.3, whatever, a trillion. Bidia. My question is, why isn't this being repeated every single day? Every single newscast should start with that salient fact. It's salient because this country is going down the crapper. We are going down the toilet. But we are sending hundreds of billions of dollars to Afghanistan? Pakistan? Iraq? Back here in the States, let's have a race to the top. Race to the top. All right, kiddies, you ready? Set, bang, go. Woohoo! Race to the top. Oh, if you don't make it to the top. Well, I'm sorry. You'll have to use textbooks that are 20 years old. Well, unless you want to use those new ones that the Texas Board of Education decided that the rest of America would have to purchase because, you know, Texas buys so many. Those are the ones that tell you Phyllis Schlafly is more important than, I don't know, pick a name. Hugo Chavez. Who? Hugo Chavez. Who? Go back to sleep. Jesus, God. And Roz writes, Mike, regarding all that missing money, do you think it has gone into personal offshore bank accounts, or do you think that money has been put aside for the next war junket in the lineup? After all, there's still Iran, Pakistan, possibly even North Korea to take care of. Why are questions not being asked, Roz writes, and warrants being put out for arrest? Boy, if the average Joe steals a slice of pizza, he's in jail so fast his head spins. The problem is nobody is willing to hold anybody responsible for robbing an entire nation of their money, not to mention their young people, right, Roz? And all the while, the country's infrastructure is falling apart. Like I said yesterday, it's a crying shame, Mike. Roz. Yeah, it's a crying shame. But it's just going to go on. It's going to go on and on and on. And a lot of the wiser people now, see, Wall Street has recovered. Wall Street's making billions. Here they go again. Billions and billions of dollars. Yeah. But it's going to continue to go on because keeping the American people totally distracted by telling them, oh, well, we've got to go over there and fight for freedom. Freedom isn't free. And meanwhile, Hannity and Beck and Limbaugh and the rest of these pigs continue to rip off the families of dead and severely wounded members of the military with their lies and their deceptions. And what do you and I do? Well, I guess we call our members of Congress and we say, please vote against the war funding. And the members of Congress listen to us and they say, no thanks. No thanks. Did I say Hugo Chavez? I meant Cesar Chavez. Oh, my effing word.
Hey, truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
The hour. Bruce writes in regarding the votes in the House. Bruce writes, given the Obama administration's rush to fire a lowly Department of Agriculture employee rather than allow Beck to make hay off of it, you can't expect them, Mike, to commit political suicide by ending the war or even suggesting that might happen. On the other hand, it's extremely unlikely that a private first class had access to and the ability to carry off this many documents, including some the military surely wasn't allowing to be widely circulated. What do you mean, Bruce? He goes on, Obama is well within his duty as president to continue a war Congress has made a de facto declaration for by providing billions and billions to prosecute it. If making these documents public doesn't end the war, then apparently America supports it. If Obama allows the Republicans to return to power, the bloodbath will be far worse, and much of it here. Okay. Last thing on this topic, and then I'm going to get off of it before I blow a blood vessel. This is from May 14th, in case you've forgotten, because we do not have an attention span, you and me. Stuff happens, we move on, more stuff happens, we move on, more stuff happens. McClatchy newspapers reported this. It was picked up by Stars and Stripes. Dateline is Kandahar, Afghanistan. This is back when Obama was having a little bit of a problem with Hamid Karzai. Here's what it says. While President Barack Obama works this week to repair his battered relationship with Afghan President Hamid Karzai, anger over his administration, Obama's administration's decision to embrace Karzai's half-brother threatens to undermine the U.S. campaign to purge the Taliban from southern Afghanistan's largest city. Ahmed Wali Karzai is arguably Kandahar's most polarizing figure. As southern Afghanistan's most feared kingpin, the president's half-brother and a member of the influential Pashtun Papolzai tribe, he's amassed unparalleled power. In an interview with McClatchy newspapers this week, he said, "I hold the key to five provinces. I am the top person, and I deliver. I am the most successful person here." End quote. Disenchanted Afghans, however, see America's support of Ahmed Wali Karzai as a disturbing sign that the Obama administration isn't serious about rooting out political corruption.
Really?
Now, see, Americans don't know anything about this guy. I've mentioned him a few times. I'm sure a few other people have, not in corporate media. Of course not. But on, you know, little glops and blips and clips here and there, you'll hear some of the progressive talk show hosts mention that Hamid Karzai's brother is a murderous, drug-dealing CIA asset. As a matter of fact, one night on the program, I even compared him to Manuel Noriega, who was so valuable, just indispensable to Reagan and Bush One until he wasn't anymore. And now, after serving time in American jail, he's in France, where his ass has been convicted again. Of what? France? Shoring up Ahmed Wali Karzai's grip on power, a growing number of Afghans are warning the United States will only undermine the efforts to establish a trustworthy and respected Afghan government. A retired teacher in Kandahar is quoted here in the McClatchy newspaper's article. If they send 1 million soldiers to Kandahar and Ahmed Wali is still here, it will not improve the security situation. And like most Afghans interviewed about the president's half-brother, she agreed to talk only if their identities were kept secret, out of fears that Ahmed Wali Karzai would try to punish his critics. Well, Brigadier General Ben Hodges, the director of NATO operations in southern Afghanistan, said regarding Ahmed Wali Karzai, the crook, the thief, the murderer, the liar, General Hodges said, quote, "I think it's in our best interest to figure out how to harness that leadership potential that he has." End quote. couple of emails, and then I want to switch to something else. Steve in Laverne, California writes, Mike, it's the same sad song over and over again when it comes to helping our own country and its citizens. It's always, sorry, we don't have the money. We have to watch our deficit spending. But we'll always have money for wars. Instead of using most of our resources on helping prevent and eradicate disease or helping the poor or whatever, we look for more ways to kill and destroy. Why? Because, yes, it's much more profitable. When people toss the word fascism around, they have no idea what it really means. What we have here, with more of a blurring of the lines between government and corporations, is a plutocracy at best and fascism at worst, Steve. Yeah, indeed, indeed. And what about those crazy old Republicans who swear they don't want to do any kind of deficit spending? They've had enough. Well, where is the 60 billion coming from, boys and girls? Huh? I thought you hypocritical bastards in the Republican Party, and you pee your pants Democrats in the Democratic Party. I thought all you people had agreed more or less that, ooh, deficit spending bad. Ooh. I know. Let's cut Social Security. I know. Let's get rid of Medicare. No, no. Keep your government hands off my Medicare. Oh, I know. Let's cut education. Oh, okay. That was easy. Anna writes, Mike, Eisenhower did not believe he could warn us about the war machine until the night before he left the White House. Kennedys were both assassinated. Ted probably had a little help blowing his chance with Mary Kopechne. Johnson did not run for a second term. Nixon must have thought he could escape the control of the war profiteers. I think he was destroyed by the war profiteers. Carter seemed to believe that the presidency and high moral values actually gave him some power. Reagan and the two Bushes all profited from the war machine, but I don't think the three were ever in the driver's seat. Clinton was a real threat because he was too middle road. President Obama may have a chance to take control of our country back if we keep supporting the agenda we elected him to pursue. If he tries to go for this agenda now, I don't think he'll make it. Focus your vitriol on those who hold our country hostage, if you dare. I realize focusing on the transnationals and their many minions who are running this country might endanger you and your family. And I'm may just be too dangerous for you to focus on them. But don't go after the government anymore. They really don't have the power to change a thing. By the way, WikiLeaks, of all those documents, takes our eyes off BP. I think they were released to take our eyes off BP. Anna. So we just should kind of be quiet and hope for the best, I guess. Yeah, Clinton. Do you ever wonder why Clinton had the Monica Lewinsky affair and the perjury trap set for him? And who really was Monica Lewinsky? And what was the deal here? And you ever wonder why? You ever wonder why Kennedy took a bullet in the head and a bullet in the throat and God knows where else? You ever wonder any of that stuff? I do. It keeps me up at nights. Dateline, Orleans. Barge hits well near the Gulf. Sends oil, gas spewing. Dateline, New Orleans, a barge slammed into an abandoned well in a coastal inlet early Tuesday, sending a shower of water, natural gas, and oil spewing about 100 feet into the air. Emergency officials said about 6,000 feet of containment boom was in place around the site in a lake just north of Barataria Bay, which has already been fouled by oil from the massive BP spill in the Gulf of Mexico. While there was no estimate on how much oil was spewing today, officials said the mile-long slick it created was small compared with the Gulf spill. The Coast Guard said the towboat Terre Anna C was pushing the barge on Mud Lake when it hit the wellhead about 1 a.m. No one was hurt. The towboat captain told investigators the well was not lit as required. The Coast Guard identified the well owner as Houston-based Sodeco Corporation, but authorities said, or is that Sodeco? Authorities said they had been unable to contact the company. Calls to Sodeco by the Associated Press were not returned Tuesday. This is from Teresa in Texas, and she adds, FYI, Sodeco Corporation is owned by Lance Dreyer, or Dreyer, a tax cheater, who owns a debt collections agency, which began buying old debt judgments against Joe and Jane Public as another way to make money. Mr. Dreyer owed more than $180,000 for unpaid taxes on his home and business. Well, he went to court to seize a Houston homeowner's home for a 20-year-old debt. And the article about this is at click2houston.com. Records of the appellate court in the property tax case against Lance Dreyer at blah, 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 blah. So if you want to sue me, you rat bastard, go ahead. I dare you. So, another gusher in the Gulf. Oh, no! And what's this I heard? There was an oil gusher, a pipeline that started in East Jesus somewhere and wound up in Canada somewhere, owned by a Canadian pipeline company, has busted loose in Michigan, and oil is spewing all over near Battle Creek, Michigan, I believe. Oh, that's a shame. Drill, baby, drill! On his, Eric Bollert, who is a senior fellow at Media Matters for America, among other things, writes on his Monday radio show, Glenn Beck highlighted claims that before he started targeting a little-known left-leaning organization called the Tides Foundation on his Fox News TV show, quote, nobody knew, end quote, what the nonprofit was. Indeed, for more than a year, Beck has been portraying the progressive organization as a central player in a larger nefarious cabal of Marxist, socialist, Nazi, Obama-loving outlets determined to destroy democracy in America. Beck has routinely smeared the low-profile entity for being staffed by, quote, thugs and, quote, bullies and involved in, quote, the nasty of the nastiest, like indoctrinating school children and creating a, quote, mass organization to seize power. As Media Matters reported, the conspiratorial host had mentioned, read, attacked, the little-known progressive organization nearly 30 times on his Fox program alone since it premiered in 2009, including several mentions in the last month. By the way, Beck's the only TV talker who regularly references the foundation. So yes, Beck has done all he can to scare the hell out of people about the Tides Foundation and, quote, turn the light of day onto an organization that actually facilitates non-profit giving. And guess what? Everybody in America would have found out about the Tides Foundation last week if Byron Williams had had his way. He's the right-wing, government-hating, gun-toting nut who strapped on his body armor, stocked a pickup truck with guns and ammo, and set off up the California coast to San Francisco in order to start killing people at the previously obscure Tides Foundation in hopes of sparking a political revolution. Yeah, well, Eric, with all due respect, sir, we talked about this, what, 2 weeks ago? And I've been talking about it for, what, 2 years? Beck wants people to kill and kill and kill. Beck incites murder. Thankfully, the planned domestic terrorist attack, Eric Bollert writes, never came to pass because California Highway Patrol officers pulled Williams over for drunk driving. On his way to his killing spree, Williams quickly opened fire, wounding two officers during a lengthy shootout. Luckily, Williams wasn't able to act out the ultimate goal of his dark anger, fueled by the TV he watched, about how, quote, Congress was railroading through all these left-wing agenda items, as his mom put it. Williams wasn't able to open fire inside the offices of the Tide Foundation, an organization, quote, nobody knew about, end quote, until Glenn Beck started targeting it. And thankfully, Williams wasn't able to take his place alongside a growing list of domestic anti-government terrorists, such as the recent Pentagon shooter, the Holocaust Museum gunman, the kamikaze pilot who flew his plane into an IRS building in Austin, Texas, and the Pittsburgh cop killer who set up an ambush because he was convinced Obama was going to take away his guns. All the vigilante attacks appear to have been fueled by an almost pathological hatred for the U.S. government. The same open hatred that right-wing bloggers, AM talk radio hosts, and Fox News lineup of anti-government prophets have been frantically fueling for the past year, pushing doomsday warnings of America's democratic demise under President Obama.
You got that mystery.
Up his connection between Byron Williams and Glenn Beck, which would only be difficult for people under the age of six. No offense to Eric, I've been doing the same thing, but it's good to see that somebody else is drawing the same conclusions now. Sometimes it gets kind of lonesome out here. I don't know, maybe a lot of people have been talking about it. I don't know. Anyway, Bowler says the sad truth is we're going to see more like Byron Williams. We're going to see more attempts at vigilante violence during the age of Obama, simply because the right-wing media, led by Beck, continue to gleefully stoke dangerous fires with the kind of relentlessly incendiary rhetoric that has no match in terms of modern-day mainstream use in American politics or media. Just listen to Glenn Beck, quote, progressives are sucking the blood out of the Republic and are going to start getting more and more violent. The progressives are. To the day I die, I'm going to be a progressive hunter. You will have to shoot me in the forehead before you take away my gun, or before I acquiesce and be silent. This game is for keeps. You can shoot me in the head, but there will be 10 others that line up. There is a coup going on. There is a stealing of America. God help us in an emergency. And some of you right-wing dog droppings say that what I put out on this program is threatening. To Beck, I hope it is. Beck is trying to inspire people to commit murder and mayhem. He already has, and he continues. He's a psychopath. In a country filled with psychopaths. Because we have a Kenyan black person in the White House. Lord, how did that happen? As Eric Bowler continues, and don't forget about the unhinged response when healthcare reform was passed in March, when Beck said, get down on your knees and pray, pray. It's September 11th all over again, except that we didn't have the collapsed buildings. And after financial reform passed last week, Beck told his audience, your republic is over. Meanwhile, Andrew Breitbart's website recently tagged Obama as the suicide bomber in chief. While the conservative Washington Times just last week published an op-ed by a former congressman, no less, asserting the president poses more of a threat to America than Al-Qaeda. God damn. note that the radical right's rhetoric, media rhetoric, is no longer even political in a partisan sense. Instead, it's purely revolutionary. It isn't,
we think taxes should be lower, or Obama should be more hawkish overseas. It's, there's an insidious and deadly plot afoot by Democrats and progressives to strip Americans of their freedom and this country of its greatness.
Obama is now the incarnation of evil, and his driving hatred for America, as well as his hate for democracy, runs so deep that he ran for president in order to destroy the United States. From inside the Oval Office, Rush Limbaugh.
Our country's being overthrown from within.
And this summer, the latest toxic twist to that line of attack is that Obama is destroying America on purpose in order to exact revenue from white America for his historic sin, for its historic sin of slavery. The GOP noise machine is now mixing a vile cocktail of, by stirring revolutionary rhetoric with hateful race baiting. It's impossible to argue that today's avalanche of insurrectionist rhetoric doesn't have a real world effect. Or that those on the fringes don't find comfort in seeing and hearing their worst fears legitimized on AM radio and Fox News. The consequences of the doomsday programming seem entirely predictable, as Jeffrey Jones, a professor of media and politics at Old Dominion University, recently explained to the New York Times in regard to Beck's rhetoric, quote, people hear their values are under attack and they get worried. It becomes an opportunity for them to stand up and do something. End quote. Indeed, the relentless message that right-wing audiences hear is unequivocal and inescapable. Do something! Take action! And last week, Byron Williams, likely inspired by Glenn Beck's Tides obsession, grabbed his guns and set out to do just that. And you right-wing swine have the audacity to send me an email about what I talk about where it concerns Beck. You're damn right I wish he would kill himself. I wish they all would. I wish they would do it on their programs, radio or television. I don't care. Save the country, Glenn. Blow your brains out. Come on. Your family members did it. You do it. Don't inspire other people to violence, Beck. Do it yourself. Arm yourself. Do it. I'm in kind of a pissy mood tonight. That would be a great getting up morning, wouldn't it? I would love to wake up in the morning, turn on CNN.
Last night, Glenn Beck put a Glock 9 in his mouth and pulled the trigger. And America cheered.
Wouldn't that be something? But no, that's not what we hear. What we hear is, yesterday, a deranged man attacked, or was on his way to attack, the Tide Center. A nondescript, low-key, low-profile organization that helps rich people give away their money to charitable organizations. The man said he was inspired by what he saw on television. All the talk about the Negro in the White House and the plot to overthrow America. Come on, Glenn. Do it. diary.wikileaks.org or go to MikeMulley.com, and it's there for you. And begin looking at 92,000 documents if you can handle it. Or, okay, not that many, maybe 7 or 8. Yeah. I got my Nation magazine today, the August 2nd and August 9th issue. You know, they combine two issues in August. Well, because it's August. And, you know, it's New York. And inside the current issue of The Nation is an ad, full-page ad. It says, do you know this man and what he will do on September 14th? And it's a picture of a guy with a microphone in front of him. And a little bit down the page is a picture of, a very unflattering picture of Charles Schumer. Do you know this man and what he will do on September 14th? You probably don't, and that's too bad. On September 14th, the primary day, the New York Democratic Party will pick its nominee for the U.S. Senate seat, now occupied by Democratic Senator Charles Schumer. Schumer expects to get the nomination unopposed, and why not? He is arguably the most powerful Democratic politician in America. He's got $21 million in his campaign chest before the campaign has even started. He raised millions in corporate cash for the Democratic campaign that put Obama in the White House with a 60-seat Senate majority. Schumer is also the party's shrewdest legislative tactician, knows banking and finance inside and out, may have the highest IQ in the Senate. Not much of a compliment there. And is a model Kodak Minute family man with nary a whiff of scandal. So what's not to like? Why shouldn't Schumer be the Democratic primary nominee for New York Senator? Don't we need more members in Congress with Schumer's intelligence, ability, focus, and drive? Yes, we do, but not with Schumer's policies. Which, if they were more widely known, would make most voters gag. He still supports the Patriot Act and wants to make its most repressive elements permanent. He still supports the Iraq-Afghan wars and wants to send more troops over instead of bringing home those already there. He opposes medical marijuana and supports the racist war on drugs that has unjustly imprisoned millions of African Americans and Latinos. He, as a shill for Wall Street and the banks, he pushed through the sweetheart bailout deal that gave AIG insurance billions of interest-free taxpayer dollars to his Goldman Sachs friends, so his Goldman Sachs friends could be paid off at 100 cents on the dollar. He is a zealous proponent of the death penalty, is fighting to expand the number of federal crimes punishable by death. He is also sponsoring a new federal law that would make it almost impossible for poor people to get cell phones. If that weren't enough, he's proposed a national ID card that would subject citizens to racial profiling and intrusive stop and frisk searches at whim. Bad as he is, Schumer is so powerful that no Democrat will run against him in the September 14th primary, nor will any Democratic office holder even endorse other candidates, much as they might like to, because Schumer will destroy their careers by funding rival candidates in their local primaries and crush them with a massive media blitz, which means Schumer will be nominated unopposed without ever having to discuss, let alone debate, his anti-progressive record. But not if the man at the top of this page can stop him. His name is Randy Gradico. Longtime activist, former head of the William M. Kunstler Fund for Racial Justice, and reformed drug addict. Like Democratic Senator Al Franken, Randy's also a professional comedian, but his candidacy is no joke. Not when it has to be financed out of his own bank account, which last week totaled $4,650. Schumer, as noted, has $21 million. A quixotic effort, perhaps. But Randy believes that his kind of issue-oriented, satire-saturated political campaign, think Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert on steroids, can be the slingshot that topples this Goliath dino, Democrat in name only, from his Senate seat. So what do we ask? Not that you vote for Randy, but only that you help get him on the ballot. For that, he needs 15,000 Democratic signatures. really 30,000 signatures to fend off challenges, which will cost $27,000 to collect, notarize, and certify. We hope you will go to his website and, one, sign his ballot petition, and, two, donate a modest sum to his campaign so he can hire enough trained petitioners to collect the remaining signatures he needs. Please go to Randy Credico. Randy, C-R-E-D-I-C-O, Credico, Randy Credico, or Credico, however you pronounce it, Randy Credico 2010.org. Randy, C-R-E-D-I-C-O 2010.org. Reading the nation isn't enough. There comes a time when one must act on what one believes to be right. Randy is doing that by standing up to the biggest bully in Congress, working 16-hour days, spending every cent he has. We believe he deserves a place on the New York Democratic ballot so voters can have a meaningful choice on Election Day. Please, if you want to be able to face yourself in the mirror, don't let Randy hang out there all alone. Randy Credico's Senate platform is no to the Iraq-Afghan wars, no to the death penalty, no to Schumer's national ID card, no to racial profiling, no to the Patriot Act, and no to sweetheart bank bailouts. This ad was paid for by the Alliance for Community Elections, an independent nonprofit community collective that is not affiliated with any political party or candidate. Randy Credico, Randy Credico, 2010.org. God, I'd like to see Schumer tossed out on his ass, wouldn't you? You talk about thuggery. Charles Schumer makes Andrew Breitbart look like the punk two-bit amateur that he is. What a thug. Charles Schumer. Hey, Charles Schumer. Not again. A new oil leak has hit the Gulf Coast today after a small boat collided with a wellhead in Bayou St. Louis, just north of ecologically diverse Barataria Bay, Louisiana. There were no reported injuries, blah, 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 as we told you last week. Jefferson Parish Emergency Management Director Dino Bonanno said in a message to fellow officials, "We cannot catch a break. We have no estimate at this time of the volume of oil of the new leak." Bum, 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 bum. The geyser is 100 feet high. The Coast Guard has taken control of the situation and is monitoring the air for, quote, dangerous levels of contamination, end quote. Both Jefferson Parish and here at the AOL News Surge Desk have attempted to contact SIDICO to no avail. Nobody answers the phone. We just can't get through. So let's move on. Nothing to report here. Oh, Lord have mercy. The number here is 877-996-2556. Lloyd is in Walnut Creek, California.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Just update me on the craziness out here.
Yeah?
What they're covering out here day after day are these two city officials that in Bell, California, this little tiny town that were making like $800,000. I mean, the local hate radio jocks are camped out there, and our local news is really just totally shallow. And that's the big story. And really, my point is, that is a teabag story. Hate government. See these government.
Hey Lloyd, hold on a second. I got to do a break. Hold on. Stay right there. We'll come back. By the way, I've been watching that story for 2 days on the nightly news. We'll be right back with Lloyd. We have an open line here. You want to talk?
ce soir, demain, la semaine prochaine.
It's more Mike Malloy.
From the orchestra, I would not run from the ball. I'd welcome the chance.
All right, back to Lloyd in Walnut Creek. All right, where are we? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we're talking about the, I'm getting an echo. I'm hearing myself a little bit.
Well,
we're talking about these the story about these two officials that were making, you know, $800,000. That's what the teabaggers are pissed off about, because it gives them an excuse to say, oh, well, government is bad. See that? See all the waste?
Well, this and wasn't, Lloyd, if I can interrupt, that wasn't about government. That's not about government. That's a whole cabal of thugs in Bell, California, who figured out a way to screw the predominantly Latino community and just steal as much as they could. That's not politics. That's Tony Soprano. That's just thugs, thuggery. That's theft, fraud. You know, and as far as the teabaggers are concerned, you know, I always come back to the same thing. Where were these cowardly bastard teabaggers when Bush and Cheney were stealing the country blind and setting us up for trillions of extra dollars of national debt, billions in budget deficits, and the deaths of thousands of American soldiers? Teabaggers can kiss my grits. I'll tell you that right now, pal.
Yeah, and you know what, I work with one, and you know, I run across a lot of people, and you know, they never talk about any of this stuff, and that's what's really important. So I'll just end by saying, you know what, we need to wake up America, and the anti-war movement needs to get out and active like it was right before the invasion of Iraq. And thanks for letting me talk.
All right, thanks, Lloyd. I'm glad you checked in. Appreciate what you had to say. David in New York City writes, Mike, in November of 2001, Aaron Sorkin wrote an episode of The West Wing called Gone Quiet. The A story was about a missing submarine in Korean waters, but the B story was about how a Democratic president could get elected, reelected in this age of right-wing venom. The campaign manager, in response to a question about how he felt working for Democrats, said, quote, because I'm tired of working for candidates who make me think I should be embarrassed to believe what I believe, Sam. I'm tired of getting them elected. We all need some therapy, because somebody came along and said, liberal means soft on crime, soft on drugs, soft on communism, soft on defense, and we're going to tax you back to the Stone Age because people shouldn't have to go to work if they don't want to. And instead of saying, well, excuse me, you right-wing reactionary, xenophobic, homophobic, anti-education, anti-choice, pro-gun, leave it to Beaver, trip back to the 50s, instead of saying that, we cowered in the corner and said, please don't hurt me. No more. I really don't care who's right and who's wrong. We're both right. We're both wrong. Let's have two parties, huh? What do you say? End quote. For years now, David writes, I've been waiting for one, just one Democrat to say something, anything similar. But obviously, with the reaction to both the small business bill and the environment bill, it's not going to happen. Sad how things never change, even with change we can believe in. David, New York City. Roger is in Los Angeles. Hey, Roger.
Hey, Mike. The previous caller, you know, he mentioned about Bell.
Yeah.
City of Bell. Mm-hmm. In a way, you know, I mean, they go after the government official, that's okay. But then how about the CEOs making 1,000 times the workers' pay?
Mm-hmm.
It used to be like 30 times or something before Reagan came.
Right.
Nobody is complaining about them, and that's why there are no jobs being created, because first the CEO has to get his 100 million, then only you can create jobs after that is being done, you know.
Right.
But anyway, but the reason I called also was you are talking about the losing billions of dollars in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
You remember that Paul Bremer, he was put in by the Bush-Cheney crime syndicate.
Right.
And when he was there for a year, and $1 billion were unaccounted for. You remember that? And after that, nobody knows where that $1 billion went. Maybe he came here and then distributed to Bush-Cheney Rumsfeld. And that has not been accounted for at all. And
well,
maybe he got some gold bars also, because Saddam Hussein had some golden bars there.
You know, I think Saddam Hussein was the least of America's concerns, the very least. The only reason we ever invaded Iraq was to steal their oil, which we now have effectively stolen. A, B, to establish a huge U.S. military presence there in preparation for attacks on Iran. So anything that occurred, Sam, in, I'm sorry, Roger, that costs the American public money and lives and blood and arms blown off and brains blown away was done strictly to get control of Iraq's assets. That's the only reason. Thanks, Roger. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back.
Your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Sam is in Los Angeles listening on XM. Hey, Sam.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
All right. How are you?
I'm good. Isn't that article regarding Chuck Schumer? You know, he also put forward Judge Alito for the Supreme Court. That was another gift he gave us.
Yeah, he did. It's just the gift that keeps on giving.
He's always been a slime ball.
Well, Schumer will always put Israeli issues before American issues. He's probably the most ardent Zionist in the U.S. Senate. There's no question about that. It has to do with his voting record and the things that he has said. When he addresses AIPAC, the things that come out of his mouth are just astonishing.
Well, I wish a lot of luck to Randy Credico, I tell you.
Yeah, so do I. Or Credico. I'm not exactly sure I'm pronouncing his name right, but it might be worth a trip to his website just to find out, you know, what the guy is all about. I would love to see somebody end Charles Schumer's political career, but you know what? He would immediately go to work as a lobbyist, probably for the banking and financial services industry, to try to figure out more ways to screw the American public out of every dime they can get out of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know what a great T-shirt idea would be is come on, Glenn, and then the Nike swish underneath it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
I definitely like that, Sam. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Steve, not Steve the banker, but another Steve writes, Mike, perhaps you can explain something to me because I just don't get it. I heard on a radio show the other day the host lamenting the fact that people on the left are complaining that change is not happening fast enough. And because of that, some of us are frustrated and really find little difference between the two parties. In response, I posted a comment intimating that it was not about change going too slowly, but it's about change not even happening in certain critical areas. I cited the fact that Guantanamo is still open and Bagram is getting bigger and that we are still torturing at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. I also mentioned the increased use of drones in Afghanistan. The assertion in the Jewel versus NSA wiretap case that Obama's Department of Justice lawyers made that the government is absolutely immune from such a lawsuit, a position the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the plaintiff in the case, asserted was worse than Bush ever asserted. In addition, I cited Obama's policy, which he articulated, ironically enough, in a speech in the National Archives building, which houses the U.S. Constitution. In the speech, his support for indefinite detention, and in fact, holding people at Gitmo, even if a tribunal finds them not guilty. And finally, I cited his, quote, too close to Wall Street, end quote, ties with the appointment of Geithner, Sumners, and Rubin. Rubin is more of an advisor. I said that these things were contributing to my decision this fall to vote or not vote. Let me be clear, I will not vote Republican. The responses I got were astounding. My concerns about these issues turned into accusations that I was racist, that I was just whining, and that I was equating Obama with Bush generally. As I've heard from you on numerous occasions, and as I articulate here, like it or not, Obama is the same as or worse than Bush on a number of critical issues. Do I think he's the dunderhead Bush was? No. Has he done some good things that McCain or Cheney Bush would not have done? Yes. However, on some very critical issues, issues that are so fundamental to any notion of human rights and justice they cannot be ignored, he is just like Bush. I don't get it. Have you heard this from the Obama apologists? Do you sense an almost Cheney Bush-like lockstep from some people? At one point, someone labeled my lamenting as, quote, fomenting voter apathy, end quote. I'm sick and damn tired of the Hobson's choice we have. As in, vote for X because people insist at least X is better than Y. However, on these fundamental issues, there's no difference. Why does merely bringing that up elicit these reactions? Steve. Well, I think for a number of reasons that you probably have already thought through. There is an enormous amount of fear that has saturated the country. It's been going on now. It began on September 11, 2001, and was immediately stoked and encouraged and pumped up by Bush and Cheney and Ashcroft and that whole crew of misanthropes who decided, well, there's only one way to control America. And that was laid out by Joseph Goebbels on how to control the Germans. And it worked for Goebbels. Surely it'll work for us, because Americans are nowhere near as smart as Germans were, comparatively speaking, in the 20s and 30s. Nowhere near. So the country has been saturated with fear for a decade, just inundated with fear. So when you bring up truth about Obama, or about Glenn Beck, or about any of these people, you immediately, you scare the hell out of people, and they just can't handle it. Especially, Beck is a clown. Beck is a potential killer. He inspires people to murder. Obama, on the other hand, directly orders death and destruction. And when people consider that, the fear gets even deeper. One thing you left off in your email here, Steve, is Obama's decision that American citizens, oh, well, yeah, they all have foreign-sounding names, kind of like his, but American citizens can be targeted for extrajudicial killing. If the person behind the gun decides that this person needs to die. I'm sure Cheney did that. I'm sure Beck would like to have that opportunity. But Obama is the only one who's actually come out and made it part of his policy. Now, most Obama supporters also saw him as the great white hope. Yes, indeed he was. He was the man who was going to come in and swoop down and chase all the goblins, spooks, trolls, and monsters out of our government. He was going to restore the one thing that this country has not had for a number of decades, and that is justice. How do we know that? How did his supporters know that? I wasn't his supporter, but I voted for him. How did the people who voted for him know that? Why, for one very simple reason to begin with, the same reason the teabaggers and the right wing hates him. His skin is dark. Surely, surely, if a man or woman in this country is dark-skinned, that person has to be a, that's right, liberal! But of course, that's nonsense. And it's racist. So for the people who supported Obama based on the hope that because he was a black man, he was going to make things better, those people need to confront their own racism at some point. And for the people who now want to drive him out of office because he's a black man, those people will never confront their racism. It will just devour them into like a goblet of acid until they no longer exist. But a lot of liberals and progressives feel betrayed by Obama. And I've mentioned this before, a lot of people saw in him a blank slate, and they wrote whatever they wanted to. Now, Obama made clear a couple of points that he has so far not acted on. First of all, that he has acted on, I'm sorry, that the war in Afghanistan was the good war of the two wars that Bush and Cheney got us into. The good war? The good war. Continued use, and by the way, the use of drone aircraft, as you point out, Obama has increased it by tenfold, twentyfold, thirtyfold. The number of innocent civilians who have blown into red mist since Obama took office exceeds the number of the entire, I have read, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years that Bush, or 7 years that Bush and Cheney put us into this war. So, when you say, why does merely bringing these facts up elicit these kinds of reactions? Fear and ignorance, which is a lethal combination. That's what Beck plays on every single day. Beck wants people to go kill other people. Beck is a killer by proxy. Barack Obama is not a killer by proxy. He actually orders the killings, and they occur. And liberals and Democrats and progressives, people who think they are one of the three or all three, can't seem to process that. What? My man orders killing? No. Yes. Before the hour. Kevin is in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hey, I really didn't have anything specific to the evening's program to comment on. I just wanted to thank you for what you do. And I haven't been able to listen for a while because of my work schedule, but I turned you on tonight. I'm up a little early, and I'm really glad you're there.
Well, it's very kind. I appreciate it. I sometimes wonder if people tune into this program. I know the right-wingers just love to encapsulate or quote what I've said on this program and turn it into something that satisfies their agenda. So it's nice to hear from people occasionally who say they appreciate the program. Thanks.
Well, like I say, I'm glad you're there, and I wish there was more programming, more personalities, more attention given to the topics you like to talk about, and they're the things I like to hear about. I find myself in agreement with you a lot. Like I say, it's been a while since I've been able to hear the show, but there's just not enough. There's just not enough truth in the airwaves.
Well, I certainly agree, as you can well imagine. Cape Girardeau, that's where Rush is from, isn't it?
Well, it's not my home. It's my turnaround.
I see.
So, I stay as little as possible.
I hear what you're saying. Well, Kevin, thanks for checking in, okay?
You bet. Have a good night.
You too. Take care. Well, that was nice. Again, if you want to, we haven't done this for a while because we haven't been approached for a while. We weren't approached by this candidate. Like I said, I just got my current issue of The Nation. And there was an ad, full-page ad, for Randy Credico, or Credico, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but he is going to make an effort to topple Charles Schumer, one of the most arrogant Democrats in name only in the United States Senate. And his website is Randy Credico, C-R-E-D-I-C-O, randycredico2010.org. And if you are a Nation subscriber and got your copy today or whenever, read the ad. It's on page 7. But I think the guy bears some scrutiny by progressives or liberals who are sick of seeing people like Chuck Schumer in the Democratic Party. Maybe not, but check him out. Wiley is in Detroit, listening on Sirius. Hello, Wiley.
Hello there. How are you?
fair to partly cloudy.
Oh. I just wanted to say that, Mike, I listen to the show regularly. I am an 80-year-old liberal black man, and I think that you are wonderful. I wish you were the president.
Oh, no.
I think that you are intelligent.
No. Well, Wiley, that's very nice. 80? You're 80 years old. I bet you've seen some stuff, huh?
Yes, yes.
How long have you lived in Detroit?
70 years. I came here when I was a small kid from Georgia.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, I grew up in Toledo, and we used to go to Detroit when we wanted to go to the big city. I remember driving down Gratiot Avenue or 8 Mile or, just going down to, there was a place downtown Detroit called the Rooster Tail.
Rooster Tail, absolutely.
It was a supper club, and I can remember my parents taking me there when I was a kid. But Detroit, to me, growing up, was it was better than Chicago. It was
yes.
It was Detroit. So yes. You've seen it, haven't you, Wiley?
Most definitely.
Are you doing all right?
I'm doing fine. I just wanted to reemphasize that I think that you are honest and brilliant, and you analyze it just like it is, and I admire you very much.
Well, you're way too kind. Thanks for tuning in, Wiley. I appreciate it. I really do. Go Tigers, all right?
Okay, right. Thank
all right,
you
man.
So much.
Mark. All right, take care. Take care. Detroit. Hey, I know there are folks still on hold, but we're just not going to get to you tonight. I do apologize. But, Wiley. I've always liked that name, Wiley. Because it's such a Wiley name, you know what I'm saying? But, boy, I could talk to Wiley for hours. I know I could. Detroit. And I swear to God, unless you knew that city back in the day, back in the 50s was when it was really hit its stride. Unless you knew Detroit back then, you have no idea why people get so upset about Detroit now. It's kind of like New Orleans pre-Katrina and post-Katrina. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.